And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
Now, you took your son to the Anzac Eve game, which, you know, it's become a fixture on the calendar. Was it fun?
Well, it was his first game for the year, and he doesn't get to see many. I had to spend a fortune at the Tigerland store. Bought one of the Anzac Eve jumpers, which undisclosed percentage goes to. I really like the design. Very exciting.
Yeah, I did think it was good. The new jumper for everything.
With the undisclosed percentage of proceeds going to a good cause, but actually like the design. Yeah. In fairness.
The design was good, and look, they do a good job with Dreamtime every year, but am I also saying I'm a little bit close to maxed out on the number of new jumpers we produce every year?
I don't think you'd be a Robinson Crusoe in that opinion.
I'm glad he got it.
Well, interestingly, I was going to save this for a second, but he got, his first name's Tom, he loves Tom Lynch, he's seen him in person, you know, very likable. He's also, because he's a 12-year-old boy, he's also seen, there are plenty of hate videos on YouTube of Tom Lynch doing bad things put up by other supporters. Not plenty, but there's a few.
Really?
Yeah, if you search Tom Lynch.
I would have thought they'd be a bit old in the tooth by now.
Yeah, but he's seen them before, right, when we were good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right there. There's less to go on in the last 2 years, but from the flag run. So he's seen all those, but still loves him. I gave Tom, we actually, bless his soul, he wanted to watch the Sydney game, the only game we'd won, and the only game that Tom Lynch has won. So I gave him a bit of a tactical breakdown of how important he was. And you see this contest, even though he didn't take the mark, see he had the three Sydney players around, and he draws it, and then the ball hits the ground. So I was sort of like deep diving Tom Lynch, sort of like the discussions we have on the pod. But anyway, obviously he was upset Tom wasn't playing. I managed down the whole expectations of the game, made it very clear that we were very big underdogs, and he gets win probability percentage because he's a big cricket fan, and so he kind of got that, and I really managed down his expectations, and we were so excited for the first half. But by about halfway through the second quarter, he said to me, "I wish I got Maurice Rioli's number instead."
Oh, wow.
Look, which is, you know, 12-year-old boys, they change their mind a lot, but... and, you know...
The thrill of the moment, yeah.
But I was talking up Morris a lot, and he's dynamic. And he's not the first person I've taken to a football game who, you know, hasn't seen us in a little while, who just instantly vibes with Morris. And, you know, Morris is obviously having the best season of his career, but... This was even in previous years. There's just something about him that it translates.
He's very eye catching.
Yeah, and
that's interesting.
He's eye catching, but he's so obviously trying so hard.
He's not always succeeding. Yeah,
but more so this year. We'll come to that. That's probably the best.
More so this year.
I feel like I've already ruined the best bit about the game wrap up. There's you know. Might not be very good. We're second last. We'll come to the injuries in a second. It's obviously far from optimal season as a supporter, but there's always the exciting young kid who's doing fun stuff. And Morris is number one on that list at the moment.
Yeah, he was fun. Yeah, he did. He's an extra layer of polish away from him and Shay tearing games apart between them. Like there were almost as many almost moments as there were moments of real impact, which was a testament to, you know, he was running hard and getting himself in dangerous spots, but yeah, it's certainly career best form.
Career best form, I think that was his highest ever game on the AFL ratings, which is pretty impressive for a guy who also led the game, all players on pressure racks, from a from which is hard from the forward line. Like normally, the second best player was Viney, which can it's easy to rack up those stats in the midfield. But he's found that extra gear that we so badly wanted him to. Like, he's still imperfect as an attacking player, but he's now so much more useful, and he's still it hasn't compromised the defensive side of his game. So it's been a genuine delight to watch in a otherwise slightly miserable season in many ways.
Yeah,
you notice I dropped the slightly there when I just thought, yep. Like, it's excusable. We're not furious because there's been so many injuries, but it's not fun to watch and not fun to get that injury report. Because, Nick, it happened again. At halftime, right in the game, Jacob Hopper was easily leading all players on the ground for disposals. And then I made a stupid joke on Twitter that things are going really well, so naturally our whole midfield will be hit by lightning right now. And it wasn't quite that, but our best player to the game at that point naturally got injured.
Yep. Yes, he did. It's a whole midfield out, Prestia, Hopper and Taranto, Bolter and Lynch, forward, Gibkiss, down back. Yeah. Jaden Short in there, somewhere as well. Interesting young players injured, older players injured. Yeah. It's a frustrating season. Thankfully, we have the giant pillow of all the recent premierships to sort of ease us through what's going to be a pretty tough year. There are also a number of players playing well, and that's sort of it. It has been interesting. There was a very good article I saw on sort of North Melbourne players and them not having trust in each other and sort of always assuming the worst is going to happen and how that causes the team structure to break down and sort of, we're not going to talk about the Eagles game, but in contrast, the Harley Reid going into a midfield with a number of experienced players and what that's meant for his role, and I think it's an art rather than a science, but of having sort of a Nick Vlosten who's just having a fantastic season, holding the defence together. He was good again. Liam Baker's, I wouldn't say it's a career season by a lot, but I reckon it's a career season by a bit. Danny Rioli's been really good off halfback. Nank's been tireless. Shea's, if not always entirely consistent, certainly had his moments. And sort of, they're holding the team together, and some young players are playing well some weeks and not others. But yeah, there's a fragility about the team, and you can see about how inconsistent that's making us. But the patches where we're playing well, they are quite watchable.
A lot to unpack there. There was about four things you said.
We haven't podcasted for a couple of weeks.
that
bit of my chest.
And that was the first thing I was going to say, was that apologies for the show last week. It wasn't because we lost to West Coast. It was one of us was indisposed.
Oh no! Yeah, I was travelling. I was only travelling for work on the other side of the world.
But we put up notes.
My fault.
We put up notes on Twitter and on our podcast feed, which you can read through if you if you miss them.
If you really want to revel in that abomination.
And a bit later, because obviously. We'll come back to this, but we talk about draft position is now hot amongst Richmond fans. So Nick's going to give his far too early draft preview. And we've got some exciting news and announcement a bit later as well. So plenty of draft chat coming up later in the pod. But back to the game. Don't want to get the cut before the horse. On your point about Liam Baker, you know, it's hard to be universe about his to make definitive judgments about his statistical output versus other years because he's switched positions. But right now, Nick, at least by the player ratings, for, you know, in perfect measure, but not bad when it's averaged over a season, he's having the best season of his career, and it's actually considerably better than any season he's had before. So it's a very valid point you're making. So, you know.
Well, it's only slightly more disposals, which, as you say, very imperfect given the different roles he's had. But he's having a career high in disposals, and he's doubled the number of shots at goal he's having as well, and a career high in tackles. He's playing really well. It is,
yeah, and close to a career high in contested possessions as well.
I know. I do find it annoying. Look, not nearly as annoying as I did, if you remember, with Seth Campbell's debut, and some idiot commentator immediately mentioned that the Tassie team with his first kick, like that was beyond what's reasonable. But it is one of the painful things about following a team that's struggling at the moment is the whole AFL trade industrial complex and just the constant. And look, I read it, you know, we're all interested in it, but it does, it can feel like that's the only thing that people talk about, and, you know, there's a risk of not appreciating how well Liam Baker's playing because there's a lot of speculation about where he's going to be playing next year.
Yeah, I always
know. Long way of putting it.
In the NFL draft, which rates incredibly well in America, rates as one of the best sporting shows, that all these players get analyzed to the nth degree. And so they're interesting in the transactional sense, but then often never get discussed in the sort of mainstream discourse once the season starts, because it's the famous players who gets discussed and not your offensive linesman. Nick, just back on Baker, getting back to the point that you wanted to discuss, but I completely agree with your point. Guess how many percentage of centre bounces Baker is attending this year?
About 30?
Yeah, nice. And his previous hire was 10%. So, does.
I'd get that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that explains some of his uptick in stats, but, you know, his role has definitely evolved and also out of necessity. But let's enjoy him for what he is, which is a really fun, skillful player.
Yeah, he's going really well. Thompson Dow has had best game of his career before, but that would be in the short list.
Yeah. Look, the inside, we haven't discussed the game as a whole. You know, a lot of us in knowledge in this podcast, we shot a bit badly for goal. The game should have been 2 goals.
We did.
Closer than it actually was. But the inside 50s were even.
Disposals were even all night and until right at the end. And I did. God, I thought our defenders were tired at the end, because they did have a number of bursts. And poor Tom Brown, who had a pretty good game, but he looked out on his feet at the end of the fourth quarter, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, if I was to summarise this game in one sentence, was that there was a massive Tom Lynch-sized hole in the forward line.
Yeah. Did you see the footage on TV of him in the crowd? I think with his parents. It was quite nice.
Yeah. He's
frustrating.
If he could get his body right, he would be a great captain. But, that's probably close.
It's a sign of our experience of the past couple of years that it was noted when the estimate of how long he would be out for actually reduced in number.
Yes. Yeah, I think the club, I've noticed that there was a bit of online chatter about the fact that the number went down. So now the number is now reliably going down. Every last 2 weeks, it's gone down. And we'll come to a bit of, maybe a bit later about whether or not he should come back. I was going to ask you about Hugo's game.
I thought it was good. I think it was a little bit sloppy in parts, but he got outbodied a few times, but he ran really hard and he tried, you know, his effort was visible all game. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think his games, he's grown up a bit. I noticed a few times, I don't know if it was clear on the TV, but it's something you can usually better see. He straight-lined a few balls that maybe he wouldn't have a few years ago.
Yep, that was apparent.
The other thing, though, is that I think he's lost a little... Like, he was playing more within himself when he didn't take Gorn on the mark. And the crowd was actually calling him to do it. I sort of thought, yeah, I reckon Hugo 2 years ago might not have done the straight lining, but he may have also taken Gorn on the mark. Like, he was very much trying to play the structure. So it was a really promising game in some ways.
He did, and he ran his guts out. Like, his on the tracking stats, like, he clearly had more sprint efforts than anybody else on the ground. And that's, you know, particularly at the MCG, that's a thing. Actually, on that point, McKelty Lefau is flashing up both on... as often on lists of fastest runner, but also covering the most ground. Like, he's a freak. And the marks... Look, the marks didn't quite stick this week as they did the week before against the Eagles. But, yeah, it's fun to watch.
I went nuts when he kicked that goal.
That was great.
We talked about this in our notes for the last week's show. It's so unprecedented, the position he's kind of in, that it's really hard to say. Like, you could argue it both ways, that he's a mature age guy coming in, he should be pretty good, but the interpretation we would both say is, well, he didn't play much junior footy, you know, was outside.
No.
He was playing school footy, not in the elite stream. And in many ways, he's still callow. So he's picking up, he's learning a lot of trade craft as he goes in the seniors. So there may be far more upside potential than you normally get from a 25-year-old key position player.
I wonder if is that the sort of the unicorn comparison is almost someone like Butzars at Geelong, who's, you know, also a super freaky athlete who came in from relatively late from outside the system, but and has been a really good player. But yeah, it's
and even Butzars took a long time to find his place in the game.
Yeah.
Like, obvious talent, but, you know, he's had a second and third act.
And it doesn't hurt the extra being 200 centimetres as well.
Yeah, it does. And that's the thing is, the late arrivals to footy are generally ruckmen or Irish football players. That's a bit different. Complete change of topic, different end of the experience curve. It was interesting watching Dylan Grimes in the flesh. There were a few moments where the old ability to cover, his ability to read the game, he still got speed. There was one particular moment where he just picked exactly the right time, hung off his man, was covering the zone, and then just picked the exact moment to make the intercept. And then the ball hit the ground, and he was going flat out, and he couldn't bend down to get it. Because it's just one thing you lose when you're old and your hamstrings are stiff. And so it was a bit of both. He's still got a lot of the athleticism and he's got all the brains. But I actually thought he was pretty good.
Well, yeah, I thought the whole against a team, with May and Lever and no key forwards who you know, we would have reasonably planned to play in the team as key forwards at the start of the season. We had more intercepts, and it was without any one player. You know, Grimes, Vlosten and Young all had 7 intercepts, Nank 6, Broad and Brown 5. Like, the defence held up pretty well, and I sort of didn't lose a lot of one-on-one matchups. Like, I came away thinking, oh, that Melbourne forward line, certainly with the tools, not all that threatening. And is there a team more reliant on any one player than Melbourne are on Max Gawn? I think the answer's no. Because
well, it certainly feels like backup.
Their backup ruck in the team is Van Rooyen, who's very much a key forward first and foremost. And their AFL listed backups in the VFL got flogged by Samson Ryan, who we played against Gawn in pre-season and were almost traumatised by the experience.
Yeah, and look, actually, the same thing happened in pre-season, but as soon as Gawn went off, the Richmond Rucks played really well, but when Gawn came back on, it was... Yeah, I mean, you can see why Samson didn't play this week. By the way, I'm sure the plan was, had there not been an injury, that we would have subbed Naismith. As exciting
surely,
as...
Surely we just assume the injury at this stage?
That's true. I mean, poor Uzay must be so scarred. But, there were a few times when we were doing the rotation. I think Naismith took the first one of the first bounce of the second quarter, which to me was we were trying to manage Nank's minutes early.
Uzay seems like a really nice guy. But do you think, like in a high-performance team and something else happens and they're sitting there going, I don't want to tell the coach again?
Yeah, I think maybe with the injuries in-game it's semi-okay, but when they missed it, like the Toronto breaking
incident. Oh, training incident, yeah. Yeah,
like imagine delivering that news.
Apparently it was obvious. Track watchers said
he ran into
the ground holding his wrist.
He ran into Nank. I'm actually not watching his press conferences at the moment because I'm a bit heartbroken for him. He's just got the worst job at the moment. Imagine that you achieve your lifelong goal and this happens to you in your first season.
Yeah, although I mean the coaches rarely get pristine situations, but it's pretty tough.
Unless you're a 3-time premiership coach who retires midway through a season and then mysteriously gets another job 6 weeks later. Moving on.
Yep.
Gawn was... He was...
He was immense.
Yeah, like twice in a row he's beaten us. I don't think this is such a niche content, but on the stats, Soldo did better against him last year than Nank this year, but I don't think it really matters. They both...
as Elsa says, let it go.
I know, he's injured now anyway. Thank you for allowing me to say that. Alright, any other players you wanted to highlight?
Oh look, sorry, I moved off Thompson Dowell, but I thought while he's had other good games before, I thought this was the best one for showing off the movement skills that were a big part of the reason why we drafted him in the first place, like the in tight, the Shane Edwards like little step to the side to avoid a tackle and just keeping his head under pressure and making himself more dangerous. Like, I think sometimes in seniors he's just got the ball and then handballed it out straight away rather than trying to take on the play and create something. And they've persisted with him through this year through some middling form, and yeah, that was, it was a good game.
Through some middling form and the injury apocalypse, which meant that other than Swansea, we didn't have many other options.
Well, yeah, and we're even like Kane McAuliffe, who we're all very fond of, but they're also, he's a first year player, and they're trying to manage him through an increased workload as well. So, yeah,
who also got injured?
Marlon Pickett tagging Petrarca, I thought was a nice coaching move.
It was, and he had to go into the bag of tricks, and it was a pretty physical matchup. They were going at each other.
It was fun.
It was fun. Speaking of, I know there'll be pressure from some fans to later in the season for his games, but I love having him out there. By the way, I'm sure we've mentioned this before, but if he needs to play every game but two to bring up his 100th, correct?
One, I think.
Yeah, he's got a lot of sons. Just saying, putting it out there.
he's playing well. I think free yourself of the burden of abstract concerns of father son. He's fun to watch. He's going okay.
I've got a good friend of ours is counting down. I'd be quite happy.
Good on him for doing so, but yeah, there are other veterans struggling more than him, without dwelling on that. We are both fans in general of Ryan Mansell and Seth Campbell, but they've had a quiet couple of weeks, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of them got rotated for one of the productive small forwards from the VFL, of whom there are several, quite pleasingly.
Well, I've been wanting to make the transition. Is now the time?
Well, let's go through a bit of the... let's do the VFL. The VFL was really fun. They had twice as many AFL-listed players as we did. They had a number of sort of, pretty high-profile guys in the team, like Josh Shackey, Shane McAdam, Adam Tomlinson, Lockie Hunter, and you would have thought Ben Brown, and you would have thought they would have won easily, and they didn't. Sonzi was immense for us, like 19 contested possessions with 10 clearances. Mentioned Sampson absolutely dominated in the ruck with 39 hit-outs. Cozzy was good up forward in his backup ruck with 4 goals. Coulthart looked good.
3 goals.
Covered a lot of ground. Kicked some goals, like I think. And Steely Green did some good work as well, sort of swapping with Sonzi and sort of a Kane Lambert style role. And I think particularly Coulthart, I think it wouldn't surprise at all to see him get a game. And Caleb Smith has played 4 games, and in every one of those games has got between 17 and 21 disposals. He looks good. He's not tearing games apart yet, but yeah, he looks good. It was a fun win.
It was a really fun, admirable win. We should also pay credit to a quiet favourite of mine, which is Lockie Street.
Team captain, going well.
And Harris got 26.
Lockie Wilson, who's come from the country as a midfielder, he's going okay as well, sort of. Yeah.
I will just say, it's getting off the point a bit, but I just noticed a few players, and they're big, famous name players at Melbourne, that sometimes their little 1% defensive efforts weren't that great. Like, they were doing things that you'd never see a Richmond player do. And just sort of after that dismal performance in the VFL by them, like, because as you pointed, you know, if, you, if you're on paper, they're a much stronger team. You kind of wonder, don't you?
Yeah. I don't worry at, of the things I worry about at Richmond, the culture and spirit of the VFL team is not one of them. And I've been, there's been a bit of talk about Mutez Elmour as a mid-season pick, and I've been a little bit sceptical, just mostly because of height, quite frankly. That, you know, but it's tough, sort of. He's sort of Nathan Broad at the next level, and Nathan Broad's a couple of centimetres, a couple of badly needed centimetres taller, and even he looks a bit short sometimes. So, yeah. He's playing well there.
And when Trezor's coming back, you sort of, like, how many of that?
Yeah, how many third tall defenders do you need? But, yeah, the VFL program's going well. I enjoy watching it.
Yeah,
And they had a pair of catastrophic injuries as well in VFL listed players. Like,
all right, Nick. Now, I wanted...
We're not winning.
In the pre-show that I mentioned, over a beer, over a fire, we had an interesting draft chat, because second last on the ladder, yep, right now. Fans are talking.
Your eyes turned to the draft rankings, or God knows mine have.
And I just wanted to make a special announcement here, that a young lad whose dad's a mad Richmond mad Richmond Tigers fan, and listens to the podcast sometimes while mowing the lawn.
Yep, we approve.
His son, Charlie Richardson, has just been selected to the Vic Metro squad. Despite playing in a slightly challenging TAC Cup team environment early on.
Yeah, Oakley Chargers, for a traditional powerhouse, are having a bit of a tough season, and he's it's not easy being a tall forward in a team that's not going so well. So
sadly there's no father son for supporters, but we'll be wishing him the best, and hope he has a good national carnival and catches recruiter's eyes.
No, great. Great to hear, and hope he goes well. I suppose the point about the draft, and mate, there's a long way to go in finding out about these kids, and particularly at the national championship, when you sort of you see the best against the best, rather than just playing against other juniors of varying quality. But there's no Harley Reid, so.
As in, there's definitive number one selection.
There's no defend. No, there's Josh Smiley, who's a 194-centimetre bull of a midfielder. Sometimes he plays back, sometimes he plays forward. He's maybe the favourite at this stage, but he's sort of, you know, at this stage, this week, he's probably the number one pick. But, you know, there's Levi Ashcroft, who's a father-son, who's looked really good. Fino Sutherland, another Oakley kid who's just come back from an injury. He's a very classy midfielder. Jagger Smith, who's very classy as well, as sort of mid-forward. So yeah, there's a nice group at the top. And there's, you know, there's Luke Traynor, who's sort of really come on as a key defender and possible top five pick as well. But yeah, it's a good crop. I'm not too fussed exactly where we finish in terms of draft position. Like, I think plenty of good kids to be had.
That's an important point in when the sort of you know, there's a lot of, rightly, a lot of discourse about the meaningless game North won at the end of last year, which cost them Harley Reid. There's probably not going to be this year.
Makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, look,
having been through the Jordan McMahon gate.
Yeah, like that's exactly right. We've seen the other side of that history. So I think the important thing is we don't have to go there. You know, in our darkest thoughts, we've all had those thoughts, but we don't need to go there because there's not a clear cutoff at a certain point.
And there's some good kids at the top of the draft.
Yeah, but we'll continue to talk about that, particularly after the national championships.
Mostly midfielders, which is just fine.
Exactly what we need.
Look, the other thing I wanted to mention, look, people, I'm sure a lot of fans will have, you know, seen the video, got the email about the punt road and redevelopment, and I know...
Just before we go serious, did that do your head in? Those mocked-up photos, they did my head in with the light in them?
Well, the one thing with that... my first impression from that was a mild sense of relief that AI is not quite ready to take my job yet.
good point.
including somebody pointed out that when you zoomed in, somebody had a Richmond jumper with the sash going the wrong way. So that there was that. I really disliked having been around long enough for several fundraising efforts, they're going entirely digital in their recognition of fans who donate money. So you get a digital certificate and you get your name on a digital honor board. And I feel like such a grumpy old man in how little that means to me versus you and I both have taken our kids to see the plaque that we paid for in a previous iteration of the rebuild, and how cool that was. And I realise that's more expensive and partly defeats the purpose of the fundraising, but it's a hell of a lot more fun, and I don't care a single iota about a digital certificate.
Yeah, well, you know, you'd think they'd be able to squeeze in an honor board somewhere in the three-story car park and other exciting developments that...
Yeah, that it's not that hard. On the plus side, though, they have started rolling out, you know, Richo and Neil Baum talking about what it would mean to them, and that just hits all of my dopamine pleasure centres, and I want to donate money. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Well, I'm on record as being a reactionary when it comes to old stadiums everywhere. So, you know, it's mixed emotions for me, but it's going to probably be, it's a lot of money. The club's going to have to deal with stages. We're probably going to be having this discussion for a long time. Well, the club's, they're fine. They'll dead up, you know, they've got the businesses now. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure there'll be plenty of discourse about
the clubs,
that.
The clubs in... they've done a good job managing their money. So, they at least all of the discussions on debt and tin rattling that we had to endure in the previous generation, that, you know, God knows several clubs have to endure. Yeah. What's who's going to prop up North Melbourne now? Like, St Kilda fans are going through another round of paying off debt. Like, we're lucky in a lot of senses. It'll be probably a painful period while they get it done. But, you know, we're in a much better situation than we have been.
Yeah. Exactly, but you know, there's mixed. The bit I'm most interested in, and the bit I will donate to, definitely, is the bit where they've said they're going to do this, is they're kind of going to recognise the old stand, and they're going to find some way to include supporter involvement.
That, and they're going to make the training oval MCG size. That's really good.
Yeah, that's the two pails as the average fan, because most of its stuff we'll probably never see or we'll get a tour of one day.
You know, gyms and training rooms.
Jeez, I'd love to see a gym session. Anyway, moving on. Freo, this has already been a long podcast after a disappointing loss. But the Freo game, how are you feeling?
So we're only 12.5-point underdogs. You know, it's at home. And that reflects, I think, the fairly unique strengths and weaknesses of Fremantle, that their midfield's great. They have elements of competence at both ends, with guys like Alex Pearce as a defender. Josh Tracy's been all right. You know, they got 5 goals out of their ruckman. They got 3 goals from, was it Darcy the week before? I might actually be confusing my Darcy's. But you know, Luke Jackson's been really good as a ruckman, was pretty good as a forward on the weekend. Sean Darcy's back, played really well. And the midfield, God, the midfield is so good. Like, Fife's, annoyingly, given we have some of their draft picks, Fife's back to close to his best. Caleb Sarong had 17 clearances on the weekend. That's an enormous number.
Yeah.
So him,
the whole team is plus 8 on average.
Yeah.
Which is a huge differential.
Andrew Brayshaw is really good. Hayden Young I really like as a halfback. Jordan Clark's been quite good, who they got from Geelong. Jager O'Meara is like a bit a fairly in depth midfielder. Like, their midfield's really good. The top end of the team is really good. The bottom end of the team is, they've got a few injuries, but the depth just isn't there. So which is why it's forecast to be a closer game than you would think. But yeah, I'm really worried about their midfield.
Yeah, it's like I was just picturing in my head, what are we going to do this week? We're probably going to bring in Swansea to replace Hopper and give him his first serious midfield moment since the Brisbane final. Like, that's a big ask, right? As good as
he's... Or we play McAuliffe.
Yeah.
But Swansea seems more obvious.
Yeah, it's just, it's so tough. And then, you know, the key forwards aren't coming back for us. So, even if we drew even in the midfield, it's going to be tough to keep winning.
It'll be tough, yeah. I'd be surprised if we played Naismith again. I would have thought.
It's a tough one. I was thinking, Cozzy probably deserves a chance. And
Cozzy was good.
He's got his 3-year contract. You've got to play him. And but it's tough, right? Because they have two proper big hulking ruckmen. So it would make sense to do that. But yeah, that's really tough. Like, it's this team. I've said this a few times this year. I have no sense of this form line of this team. Like, the Melbourne game, I think Yeet is the WWE buzzword at the moment. My suspicion is that Uzo did a brilliant job scouting Melbourne last week, which was why we were close in halftime.
Yeah. I reckon.
So is that for replicable? Don't know. So I must have been, I'm a bit, the point spread's fine, but aside from the unknown, it's hard to really get super optimistic about this game. But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Super obvious about winning, but we're not winning the flag this year. We can find aspects of the game to enjoy without getting completely hung up on the result.
No, and there is every week we've got at least half a dozen players in the team that I'm you know, I feel like we're learning a lot about them. You know,
exactly.
Guys like LaFau, Campbell, Maurice Rioli, Brown, you know, Dow. It's not a boring team. It may be decimated, but it's not boring, and they're having a crack. And I suppose that's the answer to the question of, you know, why aren't we bigger underdogs? You know, well, Freo have their flaws, and we've had some periods of good footy. So yeah, and you know, good afternoon. If it's a nice afternoon at the MCG.
I was actually going to say, one of the last things I was going to say was I always enjoy games at the MCG 15% more than any other, like,
yeah,
just watching.
No, absolutely.
And I'm quite fond of the time slot too. And Monday's not playing, so we can't break our hearts.
Yeah. And look, with all that, it's an opportunity just to enjoy the game week by week. Like, just tune out the broader, you know, people trying to, you know, talk about rebuilding and stuff like that. What does it matter? You're walking to the MCG. You know, I've always loved watching footy there. It's a team that's having a crack.
No, I couldn't agree more. The game I enjoyed most last year was Hawthorn, the late season Hawthorn win. Sunny Saturday.
Oh, yeah, that was really fun.
The G season was over. Our coach was gone. And the last thing I'll say, and this is, I sold this to Tom, is when Dusty kicked his goal, like, you know, this isn't going to happen forever. And another, any day you can watch the great man play footy is not a bad day.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.